Shopify grows your business no matter how far or big you grow. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Whether you're selling your fans' next favorite shirt or an exclusive piece of podcast merch, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/income, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/income now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in.
Osiris.
Welcome to Wheels Off, a show about the messy reality of the creative life. I'm Rhett Miller. That's when it got wheels off. We started up and we ain't gonna stop. Oh, she made me feel like a god. That's when it got wheels off. Grace Potter's new album, Mother Road, finds her road tripping down Highway 66, interacting with ghosts, creating alter egos. She brings up Lady Vagabond during the course of this interview, who appears as a character in a song on the new album. Grace Potter is a freaking tornado, you guys. She always has been. I've always been in awe of her as a performer, as an artist, as just a human being. It's a lot. Just to be around her, you think, like, how does one person have this much energy, have this much gusto? I think in the course of the interview, I call it joie de vivre. She's got it in spades. You know, and of course, she deals with the dark interior stuff that we all have, hiding, lurking, trying to thwart our plans from within. And she's done a good job of dealing with it, wrestling with it. She brings a lot of great wisdom to bear during the course of this conversation. And I'm so glad I got to talk to Grace Potter, you guys. I'm so glad I get to bring her wisdom, her quirky take on this crazy world to you guys. Thank you very much for tuning in week after week for these Wheels Off interviews. I know I get so much out of having these conversations that they must have value for y'all as you listen. Thanks for tuning in. And please welcome to Wheels Off, Grace Potter. Welcome to Wheels Off, Grace Potter. Thank you so much for joining me. How are you?
You, Rhett. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
For the edification of our listening public, where are you logging in from right now?
I'm logging in from the Canyon of Topanga. Ooh. The legendary Topanga Canyon, California.
God, I love Topanga Canyon. Is it beautiful today?
It's gorgeous. I feel a little bit guilty at how gorgeous it is. There is, you know, immense flooding and disastrous, catastrophic stuff going on the East Coast, but we are now in recovery mode, and I'm just watching from a sunny coastal town here, feeling a little guilty about it, actually.
I give you permission to just not feel guilty today.
Thank you. Thank you.
Congrats on the new record. Super exciting.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm very happy with it.
How do you handle the lag between a record being finished and out of your hands, but not yet in the public hands?
Rhett, I love that you asked that question, because that is something only a musician would ask. And it's so real. You know, a creative type is always going to love the most recent thing they did and be the most excited about it right when it happens. This has been a very long lag, not just because of the pandemic, but actually because I really wanted to make sure that I threaded the needle properly and made space in my life for this tour and to really commit to this record and share it with the world in as honest and real a way as I possibly could. And there was just so much life happening. I'm sure for many of us, the pandemic was quite a insurmountable experience. And there was a lot of ducks to put back in order afterwards. I'm still working on it myself, but I feel like the lag between when a record is completed and when an album comes out feels a little bit like torture. Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah. Do you find yourself taking on new creative projects in the interim, or are you too depleted?
Oh, no, I took on another creative project. I sort of invented one, but it was very much the doing of my own mind. In recording the album Mother Road, I was feeling like there was something else there, like it was maybe more of an original motion picture soundtrack or something, you know? Because when I would close my eyes and sing these songs, and it still happens on stage to this day, I'm seeing things. I'm feeling like there's a narrative here that goes deeper. So I plunged in with a couple of wonderful collaborators that I've worked with in the past, Catherine Fordham and Jesse Leonard at Ghost Dance Films. And we started exploring the different storylines and characters that were being summoned in the recordings. And so we've created kind of a cinematic universe, along with a friend of mine, Darren Ney. He was a former guitar player for Nikki Bloom and the Gramblers. And we've created a really amazing world that I literally, right before I jumped on this interview, I got texts from the gals that they're writing where are they? They're somewhere nearby. They're in the Hudson Valley. Germantown. And they said, you know, we need a name for Sparks's boyfriend. What's his backstory? You know, and I make different names. And it's just, it's what creative people do. I don't find myself creatively depleted as often as I find myself maybe just discouraged it feels like there's a tree falling in the woods every time I come up with an idea and I don't have an outlet for sharing it with the world. So I'm trying to open those floodgates back up again and find the best ways to share those creative intentions and urges with the world in a more direct way.
Do you feel like the hours, years that you've put into music and songwriting and performing, do you feel like that experience transfers to when you tackle other media, other disciplines?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure that you have that experience too, that there's these moments where what you learn in one field moves on. Media is, and in general, just mediums like paint or recorded music or dance or even like lighting a set or making miniature worlds and train model trains. And, you know, I was just at Legoland the other day. It's like, there is so much for us creatively, and our brains are stimulated by the game board of life in different ways. And I think that what is the most fascinating thing in my experience as a human on Earth is watching how somebody else can conjure a completely different creative approach to the same topic or the same idea through a different medium. And so I've really tried to break down those rules of saying like, well, I am just a singer-songwriter, or I just play live music. I never believed that to be true, but I've found that it's becoming easier and easier to slide into other places and feel like I'm finding a voice there.
You know, it kind of grosses me out to talk about it, truth be told, but the whole AI thing that's come up recently,
right?
It's come up a few times in these conversations I've had with people. And the only angle I'm really interested in is, you know, what do we bring to the table that it can't do?
Soul. Yeah. I mean, listen, I also think that soul is a kind of an odd way of describing it, but it really is that thing where I'm a pretty unpredictable dude, and I have like a very strange way of approaching the matters of the heart or painful things. And I always like to sort of trick the algorithm of life by doing things that feel like they would be out of the ordinary. And I'm sure if you've seen, you know, the way that AI tries to complete a sentence, it's always going to go for the most obvious end of the sentence. The result will feel comfortable. It will feel statistically accurate to the finish of the sentence. And so for me, tricking the robots, as I said a lot, I talk about, is basically doing the thing that for even myself feels a little uncomfortable or a little unnatural. And this was long before AI even really came into the conversation. I've always tried to do this in life because I've always been a bit of an oddball, and I don't really know where or how AI came into the conversation. Maybe it's been there a lot longer than I realized, but when I'm completing a sentence, I tend to try to think about what wouldn't end a sentence and then go there with it.
Yeah.
You know?
I love that. Do you remember when it was, when you realized you were going to be what you are now? Was there an epiphany moment where you thought, I'm going to be a musician or a songwriter or a performer, artist?
Yeah. I knew I wanted to be a performer, and I think I didn't know in what capacity. I knew I didn't enjoy musical theater enough to pursue that in college. I didn't like the songs. I liked songwriting, but I didn't have a great instinct when it came to songwriting. I was always kind of copying other people and finding my voice through imitation. So I thought, no, definitely not songs and songwriting. And that's when I got into screenwriting. And basically fiction and imagination that built itself. Like, I like to build worlds, you know? And so in high school, I had a great voice, and I knew I had that. So I was like, how can I take this voice and find a way to channel it into something that is going to functionally work for my life? It's going to make me some money, but also it's going to put me in the spotlight. You know, I've really loved the stage. And so I actually started getting into production design. I wanted to design sets. And I thought, I'll go design sets. This is like 15-year-old me. I'm going to design sets. I'm going to get hired on as a contractor to design like backdrops for musicals and beautiful theater productions. But I'm going to be such a good singer. I'll be singing the whole time I'm installing, and they'll hear how good I am, and they'll ask me to be in the play. That was my super great idea of how people discover me. It was like, I'll be such a good crafts person that I'll surprise them all, which is actually how Harrison Ford got cast in Star Wars. So I'm just saying there's ways that these things can happen. But I think it was about a half a year into my first semester at college when I met Matt Burr, who I had been out playing, you know, in live in cafes and stuff by myself solo. Again, trying to sort of sneak my way in the back door musically. And I was trying out new songs. I was trying out some of my own original stuff, and I was very shy about it. But I also really had the confidence to feel like I could do it enough that I would just play cover songs mostly with the occasional original in there. And, you know, one thing led to another, and we were trying to figure out a place to play. There was just nowhere on campus for kids to just sit down and try out new songs. But this place called the Java Barn opened up, but only at 2 a.m. So that's hence the name, the Nocturnals. We became the band, the Nocturnals, because of that. So it was a pretty organic thing. It wasn't like this aha revelation of, oh my God, now I'm going to be a rock star. It was pretty slow burn, starting with set design.
Did you wind up with a full degree, college degree?
I did not at first, but then when I realized that they were getting a lot of students coming to take tours of St. Lawrence and saying, like, this is Grace Potter's school, I actually just reached out to the St. Lawrence and said, like, hey, can you give me a degree? Because like, I never finished. And so I got an honorary degree after a few. I think it was in 2006 or 2007. Maybe it was a little later than that. But yeah, I did end up getting a degree there, which was great.
How many semesters did you put in as an actual student?
Four years. So, you know, yeah, I was a film major, and I had, you know, declared my major, and I was very excited about it. I really enjoyed going to school, but I also knew there's only so much that the school was going to bring me that I wasn't already sort of bringing to life myself. I'd taken a gap year as the Brits call it, a gap year. And I was 19 when I started college, and it was a good thing that I took that time to really figure out what I wanted, and then to prove that actually I didn't know what I wanted. And so it made it a lot easier for me to just step away.
The time I've spent around you and watching you perform and listening to your music, you very much exude the aura of someone who is self-possessed, self-confident, not racked by inner demons. But I know that everyone I've spoken to deals with negative inner voices, internally generated obstacles, stuff that we put in our own way. And I wonder, for you, what have you figured out as solutions, as ways to get through those or over those?
I mean, it's so interesting that you say it that way, this internally generated obstacles. And that's such a beautiful way of putting it, because they're there all the time. They're ever present. And especially during the pandemic, when I think we were all in our own echo chambers, also being a new mom, I was just full of shame and regret and guilt and fear. Your brain gets totally rewired when you become a parent. And I was ill prepared for just exactly how overpowering those voices can be. And so part of what I ended up doing was, in the same way that I internally was generating these obstacles, I internally generated a superhero named Lady Vagabond, who is the remover of obstacles. She's a quantum vigilante who can slide through time and space and remove obstacles, specifically like very tiny things like that negative voice in your head. But also like a penny on a train track, or, you know, these things that can kind of help you eliminate the doom and gloom feelings of your life and move through the world with confidence. She is constantly breaking down dimensions and recreating them again with less and less obstacles. And it's much easier for me, I think, on an emotional and mental level, to put that person outside of me and watch her do it than it is for her to live inside of me. I've always sort of struggled with taking credit for things, hence being in a rock band and crediting, you know, the band as songwriters, and even though I was writing songs myself, it's like it's much easier to just be like, oh, it's not me, it's all of us together. And you know, there you know, it does take a village to do anything beautifully and to do anything well. So why not just put that hero, that superhero, outside of myself and not claim it as my own, but to sort of separate myself from it. I think that's also the beginning of schizophrenia, though, too. So we just need to be careful.
You said Lady Vagabond?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. It's funny. Yeah. It reminds me of Julia Cameron, who's the author of The Artist's Way.
I love it.
She's incredible. I've gotten to interview her a couple of times now for this podcast. And she talks about her inner critic, whom she gave a full biography, voice, character description to. I forget his name. It's like Simon or Trent or some very British.
Oh, my
name.
God. What a shit name.
I would love to see her inner critic, Simon, battling Lady Vagabond. That sounds like a great movie.
Oh, my God. See, now this is what me, Catherine, Jesse, and Darren do all day. So this is this joy that is project building or project creation, internally generated negative voices and then internally generated superhero voices, all finding their way together. I think that's really the cataclysmic joy of life, though, you know.
It definitely provides the fuel for what you and I do.
Yeah, for sure.
So I wonder, and you know, you brought up being a parent. How old is the kiddo now?
He's 5. Yeah. Dude,
that's amazing.
I know. I can't believe we've made it. We made it to 5.
So it becomes more of sort of a real life scenario when I ask you if you'd be willing to sort of distill some of this wisdom that you're sharing and imagine a 21-year-old version of yourself in today's world, though. And what advice might you give this young version of you, younger version?
Oh, God. I mean, I think I would actually give myself the advice to take more credit, to stand up for myself. and to become my own advocate, to have more agency, and to know and trust my own voice and my own intuition sooner. Instead of, because I wasn't really an overthinker. I've operated from my gut the whole time. But it's only after the fact that I act on my gut that I tend to not really understand what magic was, what alchemy was going on there. Like, what was that thing? And so it's easier for me to sort of send that credit elsewhere than to own it and say, you know what, that was actually something that was an internally generated decision that you made, and good on you for doing that. You know, I have sort of retroactive remorse sometimes that then turns into, well, I it couldn't have come from within myself. I've got to find someone else to share the blame with or the credit. It's like an easier path to take, but it's led to a lot of confusion in my life as far as just understanding where the line falls between a truly amazing achievement and truly, like, you know, reaping the rewards or enjoying the fruits of my labor, as opposed to feeling like the whole thing is just some kind of a magic trick and like I'm getting away with murder doing what I do for a living, you know?
Do you think that there's some sort of a slippery slope from generosity, magnanimity, to giving up too much of yourself?
Yeah, yeah. And I also think that people are, you know, egotistical by nature. And there's always been this part of me that wants to be, that wants to find my humility by not caring about that stuff. We find in the giving, in the generosity that we have as creative types, that there's this just endless well of offerings that come through us. So it doesn't always feel balanced when you see the back end of it and you realize, like, what parts of yourself you gave away, what parts of yourself you kept for yourself, what parts of yourself you didn't even realize were wonderful, until later on, as you get older and you see what really worked and what didn't, what stuck with people, what connected for people, fans and the industry at large, and all that stuff is less important to me than seeing where it lands over time. I feel like time is an interesting judge of things. And as I've gotten older and I've looked at sort of the wheel of life, I'm like, wow, that's the song that really stuck with the world. Like, what? Interesting, you know, and I think that has taught me to not be as precious with anything I create, and to not hang on to things quite so much, but maybe to be a little more careful with my copyright.
It's funny, it comes up a lot in this, the idea of like a long-term career versus a career with a spike, you know.
Sure.
You and I both know a lot of people that had a hit in the 90s or had a hit 15 years ago. And it seems like a giant gift at the moment, but it winds up being a bit of an albatross.
Absolutely.
Where do you stand on this?
I think it's wonderful when you can succeed at something, but I think that it can be, you know, hole in your stocking. Ultimately, there's a weight to everything and there's a give and a take to everything. And when you start with greatness, when you just arrive into the world with congratulations, you've done it. It really is such a misguided, it's a misguided landing pad to arrive on. Say you accidentally land on a gold plated helicopter pad. You're going to end up feeling really disappointed, you know, and I've always compare it to like flying Southwest versus flying, you know, Virgin. Is like, I have had a better experience on Southwest flights than I have occasionally when I've spent all this money to go fly, you know, Mint on JetBlue or whatever it is, because you kind of already know going in, you're armed to the teeth with your protection, with your, like, your own just referential solar plexus spooling up of like, I'm gonna have to be cool, okay, because this is gonna be weird. Like, you know, even riding on a Greyhound bus, which I actually really enjoy doing, it's very much like you just kind of know what you're signing up for. Whereas to arrive with a one hit wonder experience, I think is really setting yourself up for disaster, unless you have seven more hits waiting in your belly, you know, that fire, you've got to have it and you've got to be ready for whatever the world is going to do with you, you know?
And you still feel hungry, I'm guessing, by the fire in the belly comment.
I'm more hungry now than I ever was. And I think probably it has to do with parenthood and wanting to realize that, like, not only am I not ready to go out to pasture, but like, I want to plow the pasture down and make it into a new helicopter landing pad. You know, I want to show my kiddo, you know, what it means to have a fire in your belly and to work for something, not just to arrive in this glorious gilded world and think that suddenly everything's going to be handed to you. Nothing was ever handed to me. And certainly having a little bit of success and knowing what that feels like has only led me to understand that if you don't work for it, it will go away. And that success is just this really sad letter to your former self that sits on the wall and you stare at it and it's not cute. It's kind of, you know, it reminds me of that Springsteen song, Glory Days, you know, it's just like, what is that? You know, you used to be the popular kid in school. Ugh, gross. Move on, you know?
Well, look, I've always admired your work ethic. I love your joie de vivre. You know, to watch you perform is a revelation. And I feel really grateful that you joined me for Wheels Off. Thank you so much. Oh,
absolutely, Rhett. It's so wonderful. I've always enjoyed you as well. From the first time I ever saw a poster of you sprawling across some beautiful velvet couch with a purple velvet jacket on, I was like, what the hell is that person? I want to know that. So I'm happy to know you. I'm happy to have had a chance to speak with you today about, we got deep quick. I really enjoyed that.
I love it. Well, I hope our paths cross in real life soon and good luck with the new record. Congrats.
Thanks, Rhett. Take care.
All right. Thank you so much for listening to Wheels Off. Please be sure to rate and review the show on iTunes. That helps us appear higher in the search results and lets other folks know that it's a cool podcast to listen to. Also, as the kids say, don't forget to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or anywhere else that you listen to shows like this so that you never miss an episode. This has been Wheels Off, and I'm Rhett Miller, encouraging you to create every day. Thanks, y'all.
Osiris. Hey everyone, this is Tuck from Fit for a King, an off-road minivan. Every week I bring you fun interviews alongside your favorite metalcore entertainers with my new podcast, Get Tucked. Join me every Monday with bands like Counterparts, Crystal Lake, like Moths to Flames, and many more. We play unsigned and undiscovered bands, deep dive into each artist's history, and of course provide the greatest breakdowns in current metalcore. Tune in to Get Tucked every Monday, out now through Sound Talent Media.